good Monday afternoon, or should I say, you know, payday afternoon. Welcome to Home Run, as always, Monday to Friday. We're here from 4 to 6, keeping you company on your drive time on your way home, or if you are, you know, just grinding it through at the office, or wherever it is where you are doing the grinding, as long as it's not illegal or immoral, just, you know, just, you know, shout out to you. Now, if you are grinding at Epstein Island, you know, there is no shout out for you, because that's just disturbing. Wherever you are tuned in from, thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM. And this time of the day here at Eagle FM, you have a Home Run with Helmut and Dwight. And today we have yet another exciting report. Shout out again to Office of the Auditor General. Local authorities, regional councillors, fasten a seatbelt. Things are about to get interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's fun times.
Fun time. Today's Home Run is going to be based on a report. This is a financial audit report, right? Not a performance audit report, because I keep confusing them.
Well, if it was, Hamoud, you know, there are some performance parameters in this particular report that it sounds nice, and it also sounds, you know, just regular, like vanilla ice cream, you know. It's just regular. There's nothing exceptional, except for the part that sounds nice to us.
Except for Opu. Shout out Opu. Now,
not for Marintal and Hobabis.
No, Marintal and Hobabis will be with you shortly.
Yeah, you know, things happen. Things happen. But yeah.
Poor Marintal and Hobabis. And now, let's start from, you know, from Genesis now, shall we? In the beginning.
What? Why are we doing biblical stuff, Ham?
Hmm?
Why are we being biblical?
No, we're
oh,
not.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. You're the one that has the track record of, you know, religious, what do they call it? Religious education. Spreading the good word everywhere.
I had to break the, you know, I had to break the chain. Someone had to.
Okay. So no, you can continue with the journalist. Journalist. Genesis discussion.
You know, the Genesis discussion now, today's discussion is based on the report that's coming out of the Office of the Auditor General, and the report is titled A Report of the Auditor General on the Accounts of the Trust Fund for Regional Development and Equity Provision. Regional Development and Equity Provision. Now, the establishment of the trust fund that was basically brought about by the Trust Fund for Regional Development and Equity Provision Act 22 of 2002, which came into, of 2000, but came into force in 2001. Now, the reasoning behind the establishment of the entity is, the report and the act itself, because the report is based on the act, obviously. Now, the Trust Fund for Regional Development and Equity Provision or FARDEP, I shortened it because it's just too long, and also it sounds a little like Afrikaans. And it was established to financially assist with the development of regions and local authorities. Now, that's Dwight's favorite topic.
Oh, no, I love it, Albert. I love it. But I said the thing to myself even, we have this to develop the local authorities and regions.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Decentralization Act, which speaks to a fund in itself as well. Remember the National Arts Council fund?
Fund, the one that UNESCO said, what are you guys doing?
Because the act of that particular, the National Arts Council's guys, it's known as the National Arts Fund.
Yeah.
That's the act's name, but it mentions the council. The Decentralization Act, where we went, or I went haywire, because I was trying to understand why did we have this act?
Decentralization Act?
Yeah, because the Decentralization Enabling Act 33 of 2000, Helmut, if you remember that discussion we had last year, also spoke about the development of a fund, the Local Authority and Regional Development Fund. So the first particular question, because that debate was still happening back in last year in Parliament about this regional development fund. I just want to get its names. And primarily the aspect of what is to happen with the development of local authorities and regions in their own particular right, or in their own particular vicinities where they find themselves. So, yeah, there's the state revenue fund that's being identified here, because I'm just looking for the definitions where they mention this. So, in that, yeah, here's the trust fund. So, there's the trust fund means the trust fund for regional development and equity provision. So, this thing speaks to the Decentralization Act.
Yeah, it does.
And you and I, last year, we were trying to understand, where did we get this Decentralization Act? Because it's an act that looks dormant. And it's now suddenly featuring front and center back in last year, primarily because the National Assembly guys were busy debating about this particular Decentralization Act. And I was wondering, there's a fund? There's a development fund? But here's the thing. They say trust fund for regional development.
Yeah.
And equity provision.
Just emphasize the 2000 part.
Yeah, Act 2000 as well. So they both were enabled or gazetted in the same year, in 2000.
Now, together with the Decentralization Act.
Yeah, because it says here both of them are literally of 2000. So you mentioned 2002 at the start of our discussion, right?
2001. It was basically put together in 2000, but it only came to operation in March of 2001. This is the regional development financial. Fund.
Yeah. So the interesting thing here is obviously this particular fund obviously is now been in operation. It has been acting. Because we're sitting with a financial report here from the Auditor General's Office of 2024 to 2025.
Financial year.
And when we were talking about this thing, we were talking about it in 2025 last year because we were like, we had a Decentralization Act. And the particular concern, obviously, that we highlighted back in last year was, okay, so if we knew about decentralizations, meaning taking away the burden of financing coming through from Ministry of Urban and Rural Development on these other entities that it is in charge of, because being in charge of them is like saying, listen, you will get the monies to do your particular projects, to do your particular developmental exercises, but just give us the reporting, just give us the paperwork, the documentation, the receipts, and all that. But it also does not mean don't go and be a Gareth Mnisi from Tswane with the money. If you guys are following South Africa, you know, because homeboy is a multimillionaire living it up in Pretoria. But yeah, so don't be, it's literally what it means. Don't be a Gareth Mnisi with the money. Which then also speaks towards, okay, so what does it look like? Now, I have to bring in our old age guess because it's an old age saying Helmut and I have been using. The counselor that was asked, how do you feel about the capital project in your neighborhood? And he was like, what project are you talking about? Now that's how we connect that dot, Helmut, to this trust fund report, which for all intent and purposes, according to the Auditor General, supposedly has a gold star in terms of its reporting.
Oh, yeah.
It has a gold star, so thumbs up to the trust fund, guys. It's not an actual trust fund, guys, just so that you know. It's not an actual trust. It's just the development fund, specifically. So, yeah, I'll leave it there for now, Helmut, because you were still on a different train of thought.
Yeah. Now, one thing I discovered is when it comes to the paperwork, basically the submission of all the documents and stuff. Mm. Oh, you guys did excellent.
They even outperformed themselves.
Oh, they have. When it comes to whoever's in charge of basically, you know, okay, the guys that are in charge of admin in terms of financial reporting, basically putting all the information together. Oh, bravo. The problem is the execution of the projects now. Out of the 13 projects, housing projects, this is just housing, 13 housing projects, 11 of them measured 0% in terms of their annual, you know, annual performance track record. Zero. 11 out of 13.
Now, we don't know where number 12 went, because number 12 is not referenced.
Here's the thing. Well, at least we know that in the housing projects that are that can be easily basically that can be classified or that should be classified as a success. Oh boy, is in there.
Mm.
Now let's start with the admin guys. Now, when it comes to the admin guys, if you just go to page 3. I found something that is still making my head spin to this day. A report on other legal and regulatory requirements. That's page 3 of the report. And it says, financial statements were submitted by the accounting officers to the Auditor General on the 21st of August, not in compliance with Section 22 of Public Enterprise Governance Act of 2019. So I basically decided to sprint my way to the nearest browser I could find, and then got myself the Public Enterprise Governance Act of 2019 straight to Section 22. And it reads as follows. Just section 22 subsection 1 reads, the board of a public enterprise must as soon as possible, but in any case not later than 6 months, put a pin on not later than 6 months, after the end of each financial year of the public enterprise.
Yeah.
Each financial year of the public enterprise. Do public entities have different financial years, or are we all still running with the national one, which is March?
The assumption is they all have the same, like with the government, because they, the owner of
public, basically where the money is coming from.
Where the money is coming from are all from government. So they have to be in line with government because they've got to give feedback to government. So you can't give... We can't now go and announce a budget for of urban and rural development in November, where the rest of the government was announced in February.
Yeah.
So what you will see, Helmut, is that with the previous administration, before 2025, the local authorities had delayed approvals of their budgets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying local authorities, not all public enterprises.
Yeah.
So, for example, Keetmanshoop's record, according to them, their record budget of 2024. Was it 2024? When did you and I start together here on the home run?
Wasn't it 2024?
Yeah, 2024. Yeah. So, at the start of that year, January 2024, Keetmanshoop came out and said, yeah, they've got this record-breaking budget that was approved as 288 million, the biggest they've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And just to hear, when I went and looked at the whole broadcast, the streaming, the live streaming of the council event, when they announced it, it was, they had already used 70% of their budget. So it was said, yes, at the end, in the new year, just before they had to submit financial statements to be approved again. So in January, you're going like, yes, our budget has been approved, but you are busy submitting your statements.
In January,
February, because in February, the Minister of Finance has to go and announce in Parliament the next budget. And that was ultimately the scenario that we saw back in last year. So yeah, I mean, it was a bit peculiar. Because this fund technically has to work in conjunction with the local authorities and the regional authorities. Because it has to help them with infrastructure development. And it makes things also tricky because when you and I also spoke in 2024 about the, what was that infrastructure thing that showed the short-term to medium-term infrastructure or expenditure framework, where all those infrastructure, those capital projects,
Is the 500 page one?
Yeah, it was the 500 page one that we first went through, because last year we went through the 1000 page one. Oh yeah, there's a new one. I have to send it to you.
It's not 2000 pages, is it?
No, I have to make sure, but okay. there's a new one.
Because the pages keeps increasing.
So in that scenario, we could see literally the impact of what was supposed to be focused on for infrastructure developments and infrastructure erection. So, yeah, but that was one explanation. Because remember now, during the course of this year, Helmut, we will start hearing other things coming about, and something is announced here, groundbreaking over there, this there, and that there. Remember, there's still, what's her name? Anacleta's favorite school in Ndama North or Ndama South that has to be approved budget-wise. That has to take place. So potentially you can add that development on.
Yeah.
The moment when the minister, Steenkamp, has to go show up there to break ground, which is just put a shovel in the ground.
Uh-huh.
Then that comes on into the next budgeting cycle of this is now this construction work taking place. So things, they work funny primarily,
mm-hmm.
but the accounting always tries to trace and track the actual developments. That's why that statement that the report makes of the 11 projects that didn't record zero, that recorded 0% progress during the financial year.
Yeah.
Is a bit puzzling because it doesn't say if the projects were complete, if the projects were just put on ice. Remember? It didn't say they were put on ice. It just says 11 out of the 13 projects. Now, what happened to number 12? We don't know. We know number 13 is Opuo, who had 100% completion rate of, you know, and this was housing.
The report recorded 50%, which is also, it's also, that 50% is also in brackets.
True.
Yeah. And, now the thing is, the point I made earlier in comparison, comparing the, page three, the last paragraph of the report with section 22 of the public enterprise governance act, because it's referenced in that part of the report. It's indicating that, the financial statements were submitted by the accounting officers to the Auditor General on 21st August 2025. Now, and then it indicates that it reads as follows, that not in compliance with Section 22, but Section 22 of the Enterprise Act indicates that after the financial year ends, if I'm reading this right, after the financial year ends, they have to submit their financial reports within 6 months. And August is within that time period. Yeah, which is why the whole not in compliance with Section 22 is making my head spin, because I mean, I don't get it. Yeah, because your Section 22 says a board of the public enterprise must as soon as possible, but in any case, not later than 6 months. And if I'm, if the end of a financial year and say, February and March is the beginning of a new financial year, and you go March, April, May, June, July, August is the 6 months.
And the nice thing is what they outline in this report is that they show you the various locations where the development projects took place.
Yeah.
Like, on page, specifically like from page 14 from the, let me just be sure about that. What's that? Continued. Okay. So it's like one, but large. So it's the trust fund's statement, of comparison of budget and actual amounts. But it literally accounts for everything. Now, if you go, you skip page 12, page 13, and then you get into page 14 where you start seeing, town councils or local authorities. And this is ultimately looking at operational funds. Okay, that is aside. And then you get to projects that were supposed to be done. So there's an uncompleted, built together program houses. Oh, that's the BTP, built together. construction of new built together houses, and they even throw financial years of 2020 to 2021 for Hobabas into this mix. This is a 560,000 guys brought from another financial year as a year in gegooi. For 500,000, wow. I wonder how many houses those were, because it doesn't indicate quantity. For Okunjatu, no, Okunjutu, sorry, Okunjutu.
That 500,000 is for, is it overall or for a specific town?
Just for Hobabas.
Oh.
For 2020 to 2021.
Oh, okay.
But here's the thing, Ahmed, this is 2024 to 2025.
Okay. Yeah.
So does it mean, specifically, that they ended? Remember on page 4 when you highlighted, when they noted the 11, the 13 projects, but Hobabas Marintal had a, was mentioned there?
After that, the 11 out of, the 11 out of 13 one, that's, yeah, that's on page 4 under 9.2, and it says, project completion out of 11 tracked housing projects, key performance indicators. 11 reported, and I'm, housing projects slash, housing projects slash key, KPI, key performance indicators. 11 reported 0% progress against the annual targets.
Yeah.
Now, this is also one where I'm going, is it this housing? Now, I'm looking at, I'm combining key performance indicators and housing as one thing, because it says housing performance, not housing performance, housing project slash key performance indicators.
Yeah. So they're combining it together.
Yeah, they're combining it. So it's 11 completion, 11 completion out of the 13. Basically, out of the 13 tracked, 11 reported 0%. That means 11 did not report any progress. Now, this is against their annual targets.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously set annual targets in terms of what they are going to, you know, what they are going to complete or something like that. Now, the funding issues, that then the next part, that's where you, Hobabis and Marintal comes in. Funding issues for the, Hobabis slash Marintal projects. A challenge was the insufficient fund allocated per house to complete the construction.
Now, here's where things get interesting. Now, as I'm looking at, Hobabas is mentioned twice under the same particular category of the comparison of budget versus actual budget.
Yeah.
Now, I mentioned just now the Build Together program, construction of new Build Together program houses for Hobabas, valued at 560,000, but it's an amount that comes through, meaning it was approved in 2020, 2021. But they cite there a performance indicator of, you were supposed to have to perform this, plus build these houses.
Yeah.
And if you go down from page 14 to page, let me just be sure about that one, is page 16. On page 16, where it's the construction of new. No, no, it's not here. Yeah, it's the supplementary funds from approved projects of 2024 to 2025. Hobabas features there. So an additional 300,000 was allocated to Hobabas. But
for 2024, 2025?
Yeah, in 2024 to 2025, yeah. For 2020 to 2021's budgeted houses. Do you understand the confusion here? So the houses first show up here. The Build Together program houses for 560,000. They were approved in, from what it seems, from what the accounting says here, in 2020 to 2021. They were approved there. And they indicate a completion rate of 100% right there. And then when you get to, okay, what did you allocate in 2024 to 2025 for Hobabas, for example, in terms of whatever goal was stipulated there? Mm-hmm. The goal was obviously the construction of supplementary funds from approved projects. So this means, they probably were like loose ends, like the Namra situation where the contractor probably said, I underquoted you guys. Things happened. Iran was being bombed oil. But it doesn't highlight these explanations. Cause, here's the thing, Amut. If we obviously have to look and understand, okay, so, why did you give an extra bunch of money for a project that began in 2020, was approved under a pricing strategy in 2020 to 2021, but you're allocating money again 3 years later, 4 years later, to achieve that goal?
The goals were not achieved.
But the goal says it was achieved. But why did you...
Is that an overall goal or the annual performance?
That's, now that's where things get interesting because, okay, so why did we have, why do we have an additional allotment of 300,000 for Khobabas? If Khobabas had 100% completion rate finishing up in 2024, 2025. Remember, this report is about 2024, 2025. So why would you have a completion rate being indicated here? And this is also sometimes what makes public accounting a little bit weird for me. I can understand, to, in all honest and fairness, guys, I'm not like the journalists that will go say, oh, they wasted so much money against what? It's a public entity. It's, it has to stimulate the economy. It has to spend the money. You can't just receive money and then go and sit with the money. You can't, Helmut. That's one of the basics.
Usually no one sits with the money. Usually they either spend it on projects or chop the money.
That so. Too. And in both scenarios, they stimulated economy.
Hey, not the second one.
They stimulated the economy, Helmut.
Well,
look, if you're going to stimulate the economy for the Audi dealership here in Windhoek, you are going to do that. Because that Audi will go, that Audi dealership will go like, you know what? Dwight showed up here with his, we don't know where the money came from.
And frankly, we don't care.
We don't care as
well. Business is doing well.
Yeah. However, Dwight bought three cars. No one has bought three cars in one single outing. That looks well for us. The salesperson gets his or her commission of at least 45% of that total expenditure of close to 6 million on three cars. Wonderful. I mean, Hamid, if you just imagine to yourself, what is 10% of 6 million?
You're the sales guy.
You're the sales guy. You wouldn't need to work for the rest of the year. You don't have to work for the rest of the year, Hamid. Actually, you don't have to work for 5 years. Literally. Huh? Yeah. 10% of 6 million is what? 600,000.
Yeah, nah, that's not gonna cut it.
So you'll be happy. You'll be happy to the bank.
Yeah.
I mean, if pay as you earn takes 25% from that 600,000, what is 25 of 600? 120? No? 180. They take 180 from you.
You don't have 600,000.
You know, you pay your taxes,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And you can argue as the salesperson, yeah, but I gave you 180,000 off that 600.
Yeah.
But you're still happy because you got 400,000 out, Hammer.
Yeah.
So, I know we deviate a little bit, but here's the particular concern. You can see, yes, it, in some cases, if a housing project starts and it was approved here in 1 year, which was literally during COVID, this particular window, the window that's indicated here, 2020 to 2021, you can assume to yourself, okay, so we're working under lockdowns, we're working under problematic conditions, it's difficult for the builders or the guys on the job site to move and finish up the work adequately enough because of the threat of COVID and because of the imposition of what was that? The
face mask.
The face masks and all those other particular health measures. Mm-hmm. So you can assume, we can assume definitely that the reason why this potential process took so long is probably because of what happened in COVID. And there might have been backlogs. There might have been things happening in between on the ground, which is also not accounted for in the report. And now you see an extra 300,000 being allocated to in 2024 to 2025 for Khobabas.
Yeah.
And then there's another lovely explainer that comes through here as well. And this is what makes things absolutely wonderful. So what they note here, and this is on page 17, they explain Khobabas.
On page 17?
On page 17 under contingency funds number 3. So they explain claims made against contingency funds. So a contingency fund is usually a fallback fund in the event that what you budgeted for is not enough for what you want to materialize.
We have contingency funds. That's brilliant.
But that's also not what you hear in Namibia's mainstream media. Mainstream media being, they don't explain it like that.
So, they don't explain that, like, we have contingency funding?
That we've got contingency funds set up in the develop, in the project planning and in the developmental project planning of, local authorities and regional authorities.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, Helmut, you don't want to show up, you don't want to appear, you know, in a, with, in front of a, of a parliamentary standing committee, having to explain why you're coming and asking for a bailout or for an extra allocation.
Yeah.
Because it seems like these guys already knew you've got to have contingency funding in place.
So that, in case, you know, you run into a number of situations if we underquoted your...
That too. That specifically. And secondly, to also identify, okay, potentially we know that the price of bricks will escalate between 2020 and 2025. They do, yeah, unfortunately. They do. Even though the brick just has to move from there to here, you know, from, let's say, from Southern Industrial to where the shop is, mm. the brick has a price of petrol on it somewhere. So, yes, yeah. we know that as well. The concern from this has been, people also have to understand that sometimes our administrators, they're not dumb. They know what to do. It's the administrators that we thought were not dumb. For example, with the Ombudsman's report, who we thought, they, I'm sorry, Namras guys, but who we thought were not acting dumb-ish, just to be told, yeah, you don't have those rights. You don't own those powers.
Oh, man, I don't think there is going to come a report that will beat that one.
But you know what that, what precedent that the report actually said, someone?
There are a lot of people in public office that don't know their operation parameters in terms of the powers they have that, not, that office has.
Not just that one. That would be the first one. Because it lays the foundation of what we see is present.
Look, the painful thing is, someone just, you can bet, Tomboy thought they was giving an excellent excuse on this one that, well, you can't pin all these things on us because in this recruitment process, we used an external entity. We outsourced, part of the recruitment. They had to be told that actually
which you were not,
allowed to do that.
Yeah. Which brings.
And I was like,
Which actually brings, Helmut, the whole discussion of potentially, if the ombudsman had to do an audit on what's the thing, the word you just used, on the recruitment processes.
All across the public sector?
Across all SOEs. Then.
Ombudsman, please.
Please, ombudsman, please do that.
Please,
we would love to see that report. Uh-huh. It would be an awesome report.
Nothing beats people shooting themselves in the foot because I'm not saying.
And this goes for a lot of the executives, né? A lot of their managers and even their CEOs and stuff. So, yeah.
I have the power to do this. And like, well, not according to Section 80. Nothing is going to
never have the power. So the precedence that emits or that is being transmitted, let me use that. Or let me use the uranium's favorite word. The precedence that is being radiated from this discussion is primarily we get to see, okay, so a performance audit is potentially needed. Because Ombudsman's office didn't do a performance audit, but it looks like a performance audit.
Oh, yeah, it does look like that.
And Auditor General's office, they obviously just have to look at the financials and performance. You know, there's a particular clear standard and they go and measure whether or not the standard is being met. Here's the funny thing. Would we then also potentially try and understand in broader depth? Because I'm suspecting this is the first time I've seen the trust funds,
Report.
Because I don't remember seeing a trust fund report last year. And I mean, I tried downloading these things and try reading up on them and then trying to understand, okay, so for how long have we had this? And then there's also the other troubling thing specifically that if you ever look at the reports that are tabled in the National Assembly by the Auditor General's office himself, actually, it, because it's delivered to Minister of Finance and the Minister of Finance has to submit them, to the Speaker or to the floor, is that you sometimes wonder, okay, in terms of public accounts, because public accounts, that committee is must there, the Committee on Public Accounts.
Mm-hmm.
What does that committee do? Because that committee then would also have to go and look into these particular reports and then try and understand from these reports, okay, so what is happening? What's on the ground? What has not been happening? Who didn't perform? Who didn't deliver? Who didn't do this? Who didn't do that? What are the particular remedies on the ground?
Yeah.
Because Hamid, it was painful for me to understand alongside the, when the Oshakati Ayakoto just discussion with Justice, Ministry of Justice and Judiciary happened, where the MP, Paula Cooper, was trying to ask now from the two executive directors.
Oh, yeah, that's what. Oh,
the question of where is, what was it, Karatura East?
Oh, wait, that's the part that got you, oh, no.
Where the prefabricated courts were supposed to be built. Yeah. She was asking, where is Karatura East? Because how we understand it, us that have voted, is that you follow constituency lines, right? I'm saying us that voted.
Yeah.
You follow constituency lines.
Yeah.
And I was also sitting behind them and I was like, it's a, where is Karatura East?
Please help me out here.
No, but really, they couldn't even answer that question. Because then the executive director of justice at the time, Pickering, answered, she doesn't have information about how the placements were arranged because she all herself also didn't apparently know about how, what it would have looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And that some of the concerns was that was there was supposed to be an allocation of an erf, you know, like a piece of land.
Yeah.
Now, don't worry, guys. We're not going to make jokes of the High Court door for now. I say for now. Because what also stems from here is that you can actually see, this is actually a development budget that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
With operational budget aspects as well. But, they explain it lovely. And this is what I, and accounting, Helmut, is not rocket science. Accounting is a particular discipline that helps to explain where the money came from and what you spent the money on. But that only happens if you can account for every cent. Because yes, an auditor can be fired for 5 cents that they can't find. Did you know that?
5 cents?
Yeah, in the private sector. The guys that I knew who worked in the private sector, they literally said,
5 cents?
You can, if your report shows that you are missing 5 cents, Hamid, and you didn't go over everything, it's tantamount that you could potentially be, face disciplinary at your practice.
For 5 cents?
For 5 cents.
Holy cow.
Because they are supposed to be like this independent, non-partisan, field in the private sector, meaning that the reports of an auditor will be used for getting more loans from the banks.
Mm-hmm.
The banks obviously would trust this particular information. That's the same view we're supposed to have of the Auditor General and the auditors in that organization. The same view we're also supposed to have of the Ombudsman and their particular investigations. But the Ombudsman has a weird mandate because it's about what? Human rights. Their mandate is on like human rights.
Mm-hmm. Hear both sides, according to their motto.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. Look, Helmut, a human rights dispute can also erupt between 2 5-year-olds that were arguing in the street, ne?
No, those ones just need milk and a nap, they'll be fine.
True. So yeah, it's a pretty broad. We have to look at the functionalities and where things exist.
Yeah.
Now, the explanation given under contingency funds, mm-hmm. because that's like I said, if you plan a system properly,
mm-hmm.
It won't be a need for let's say a local authority or regional authority to continuously run back to Ministry of Urban and Rural Development to continuously ask for more funding.
Mm-hmm.
The aim here, as I highlighted with the Decentralization Act, is that the local authorities and the regional authorities have to sustainably build themselves up. And they have to take charge and take responsibility of their own futures. They have to go and build their own houses. their own public service installations. They have to go and build their own roads. And that has literally been my... What's the religious word for a scripture, Hamoud? Or my preach? Yeah, that has been my preach for the past year. Wait, when did we have the local authorities election? Last year, yeah. That that is supposed to be the theme of the day. These guys are supposed to come and account alongside the regional authorities why certain projects were not completed. Here you know what project, built together program houses, completed, budgeted for in 2020 to 2021, somehow got an additional 300,000 allocation from the contingency fund in 2024, 2025, meaning it's part of a planned for or a approved project. It's not a completely new project. It's just more money to the project. So in essence, you can view that Khobabas's particular implementation on the ground rounds up to 800,000 in total. But I first want to read the sentence, what it says, what it says. Contingency funds under number 3 on page 7. This is now for the trust funds particular, extras on, you know, the please note section for comparison of budget and actual amounts. Contingency funds, claims made against the contingency funds during the financial year were to supplement financial shortfalls that were encountered by Khobabas municipality.
Did you say page 7?
17.
Okay.
Yeah. And this obviously has to highlight that, you know, it's a discussion about how the paperwork is kept, managed, and then obviously submitted at the end of every financial year. Another interesting thing is obviously also where it notes ongoing projects, still on page 17. Yeah. The execution rate on ongoing projects was at 59%. Now, this, Helmut, sounds contradictory to what you highlight and saw on page 4. Because we were told on page 4, 13 projects are there. 11 of them had
recorded, 11 of them recorded 0% annual
progress.
Targets.
Yeah.
Progress on the annual targets.
Opuo recorded, was it 60 or 50%?
No, 50%.
50%. Now, where's project 12? Who's project 12?
No, I'm looking at this as more of a, okay, there are 11 housing projects in total.
Yeah.
But out of those, there are 13 projects in total. But out of those 13, this 11, the ones that recorded like
no progress,
like annual targets in terms of performance, and I would go with only 2 projects that recorded some kind of progress out of those 13. That's how I'm reading it.
And then when you look at the particular discussion on page 17 under point 10 of ongoing projects, where they note execution rate on ongoing projects was 59%, slow progress was reported on the ongoing projects during the financial year. So, which projects? What are we looking at? Who are they? We can't just be clapping hands for poor Opuo.
Yeah.
And then when you go to Opuo, you find it's just one house that was built literally during the same particular period. But it also, I mean, according to this particular report, an unqualified opinion, if you guys know what it is, it means that for the auditors that looked at it, the financing, the money received, correlates with the paperwork that was submitted in order for the report to be constituted. I always get confused between the three labels of audit reports. Unqualified, qualified, and adverse. The last two, qualified and adverse, you should be worried about. Because qualified says...
That's counterintuitive.
Yeah, I know. The labeling and accounting, they love doing that, Helmut. I don't want to talk to my accounting friends or peoples because sometimes they are worse than lawyers that look at the Constitution. They will tell you, a law is a law is a law.
You can't argue. A bunch of Latin that will confuse you even worse.
And then you have to ask them individually, what do you mean by that word? What do you mean by this? I mean, I still remember till this day, Helmut, about the one girlie in the media law class that I had, who wanted to debate with the, so we had, like I said, we had these two lecturers The first one is a journalist lecture, there's a media lecture, the second one is a law lecture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she wanted to debate with the law lecturer, which was also a lady, and the law lecturer was, you cannot interpret the law to fit you.
No, just apply it.
It's straightforward. You read the text. It says, if it says do not kill, it means don't kill.
Yeah.
The police will come and arrest you. You will get booked in. Case file will be opened up against you. Investigation will start. And if it is said that you are the actual perpetrator, you are locked up until you face the judge. And if you go and do stupid antics in front of the judge in the court, then you will be charged even with contempt of court and so on and so forth. Which also is a discussion in terms of how people understand our systems.
Yeah. No, more like a lack of understanding. Look, that yesterday on my Mind the Gap show, one of the things that I covered significantly, or which I found very interesting, is how Julius Malema ended up with a 5-year sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, the one of the, you know, charges he was facing is discharging a firearm in public and then firing that firearm, which goes contrary to South Africa's
with live ammunition.
With live ammunition, yeah. And the gun itself has some type of has a questionable permit. Now,
because it's an assault rifle,
you have a lot of things going wrong here legally. First of all, you show up with a gun in public. Look, it's a rally. No one was shot, but you have to understand.
Was it a rally? Or was it a birthday celebration?
No, I think it was a political rally back in 2018. EFF.
Yeah, because some of the media reporting has they confused the EFF birthday celebration of 2024 with this 2018 rally.
So it's a mixture of both. Now, you see, one thing I was able to find is that if you follow the whole, the whole case back, especially if you take it from Arms Control Act, it took me to 2018.
Yeah.
Now, in 2018, after that rally, I don't think a lot of people made a big deal out of it. That's why, I mean, this was a public event and a video was taken. And after that video was taken, it went viral. And then it landed in the hands of AfriForum. And AfriForum was like, all right, we'll take it from here.
Those guys.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, in South Africa, the politics is just on a level of petty.
Look.
I mean, you didn't do anything. Someone will find an issue with you in South Africa.
The thing is, AfriForum, now, if you look at the policy of, the policy in a way that AfriForum and EFF, look at their policy initiatives.
Mm.
AfriForum is very pro capitalism, private private sector.
Yeah.
But EFF is leaning heavily, very heavily into socialism.
Yeah.
So obviously these two are always in conflict. Now,
and South Africa has a history of socialism.
Exactly.
Look, South Africa has a rich history of capitalism.
Oh, yeah, that.
And it's funny that you highlight this, because I spoke to my sister just yesterday, and she said, socialism will never kick off in South Africa. Do you know why, Helmut?
What?
The South Africans love money. If you remember that
principle. Like commission. Makes sense.
Do you remember that principle that I was explaining to you back in last year about how to make money move in order to try and do away with the inequalities? The aim that we face in Namibia is accessibility to money, right? The South Africans. Helmut, you will go and make jokes in a bar. You will walk out a millionaire.
Don't make me go to don't make me
You
go
will
to
walk out a millionaire, Helmut. You will make your salary 5 times in 1 week. That's the level of money in South Africa.
Boss, if you find out I'm in SA, blame Dwight.
No, but it's a reality.
Yeah.
But, I mean, for South African, for a Namibian that has never been to South Africa.
Yeah.
That has never seen the various cities of South Africa.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to brag, but I've seen 80% of South Africa by road. I've driven there, driven through, stayed in places, seen places. My sister even made the joke yesterday about saying, Dwight, then you come and visit me in South Africa. I was like, nah, I don't want to fall in love with those beautiful women in South Africa. Helmut, if you've never seen a model, but a model of international modeling standards, I don't know, here in Namibia, yes, the ladies can come and beat me up. You can come for it. I don't care. But it's a scenario where you even go like, does this person really exist? Is this person really true? Is this not an Adobe Photoshop situation here? Or was the person not doctored this way?
Right. Do you have any idea how many people from my gender group are parking right now to illegally enter South Africa?
No, they can go to Cape Town. They can start from Cape Town and then they can go crazy there. Just don't come back when you become crazy. So, that's the situation. Now,
yeah.
Imagine just access to money. But yeah, so, you were still saying how much.
Yeah. So, it's just the whole technicality part is because, AfriForum, from the look of things, took the case to the police and the police did their, their necessary paperwork and handed it to the National Prosecution
Authority. Did you say unnecessary?
their necessary paperwork. Not unnecessary. Their necessary paperwork and handed it to the National Prosecution Authority. From the look of things, the National Prosecution Authority did not want to make a big deal out of it, because they were really dragging their feet. So, AfriForum kept telling them, it's either you have to prosecute this case or you have to, or they're going to apply for, they're going to apply for a mandamus, which is basically, a way of telling the court to force an SOE or more like an entity to do its job. And it's either that or they're going to apply for another direction, which will basically require the National Prosecution Authority to give, to hand over the case to AfriForum to privately prosecute it themselves.
Yeah.
I think all these things became somewhat of a push button for them to prosecute the case, which is why I totally understand why it ran for, this whole thing had been running from 2018 to this year. Now, you can call AfriForum petty, but each and every button they pushed has legal reference to it.
Mm. And it actually required a government entity to act.
Yeah, it just told them, according to this law, your job is prosecute. Now, again, if you don't want to prosecute according to the very same law, not us, according to the very same law, you have to, we will go to the court, to the High Court or Supreme Court, which will then compel you to prosecute, or according again to the very same law, you will have to give us a certificate so that we can prosecute the case on it. Now, at that point, you can imagine the guys at the National Prosecuting Authority, they were going like, oh, you just had to fire that gun, didn't you?
Mm.
Yeah. So, look, the whole thing is very buried in technicality, which is why, if you look at this report, and you know the track record in terms of financial reporting of the entire Namibia, from executive offices all the way to local authorities, financial reporting, we have been terrible at this. But I'm delighted to inform you that administrative wise, we are doing very bravo. Now, page 4. It says, the subject was most successful, showing excellent adherence to internal processes and meeting requirements. Yay, bravo. Next point, meeting compliance. Project committee, finance and audit committee, and the board meetings all met or exceeded their annual targets. 100% or 125% achievement. Job well done.
Even overperformed.
Overperformed. 125%. You guys are
should not even exist, but it apparently exists.
Apparently you guys were that good at all these things. Now, the last thing, because they have a whole list here, and they have internal compliance, the quarterly annual plan review were conducted at 100%. Again, bravo. Performance agreement with the Minister Board of Trustees and staff were all successfully signed and reviewed at 100%. You guys are nailing it, just 100%, 125%. And then there's execution of projects now.
But that's where things also get interesting.
I know. Becomes painful now.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so we're good at paperwork.
Yeah, we're good at filling in the forms. I mean, you even highlighted, Hamoud, the rates, the percent. Okay, the execution. Because if you read that part, I just want to help you with another part that I find here on page 17, in terms of that helps to explain things that you don't see in the specific sort of like budgeting versus actual budgeting reflection. Now, they note here, new projects, still on page 17, this is under point 12, and total funds committed under point 13. For new project, they say, the implementation of new projects, because we have to view this fund as a continuous stimulating entity. It's an entity that continues to position financing to basically to achieve build together program houses, as well as also make available financing for the various local authorities and regional authorities to tap into, so that their operational budgets or development budgets are not depleted. You know, what is allocated to the town is not depleted so quickly.
Yeah.
Because there might be other projects like utilities, connecting things and services, even though it's also reflected here, utilities and connecting services. What they note here of new projects is that the implementation rates of new projects is faced with numerous challenges to be addressed, hence the budget execution rate was only 8.3%. But here's the question. We didn't see it in the first part where the immediate summary and the summary was positioned.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't also see it specifically in the budget versus the actual budget comparison situation, because it just shows you the tallies, who was given what money and what was the completion rate. So 8.3% means this is still ongoing.
Yeah.
Under the given period of 2024 to 2025.
2025, yeah.
For total funds committed during the financial year, this is 2024 to 2025, they only committed 21%. Now, what does this mean? Does it mean that at the start, things looked rosy? All monies are accounted for? And when we get to page 17, we now have to hear that only 21% of total funds, not budget or the development budget funds or overall operational funds, total funds, only 21% was committed.
It was used.
Because it baffles me further, because if this sentence tells you 21% was only committed to projects or whatever it needed to do, then where's the other 79%? Did you just return it like that? Or just, did you just report it back like that? What happened? Now, it also specifically speaks to, like it was highlighted, the particular approach that we're obviously seeing taking place here, because back in September of last year, when I went to that civil society engagement with the Minister of Finance, where the Minister of Finance, in the article that I wrote for the e-paper, also highlighted that only 30% of the development budget had been implemented. We were trying to understand, okay, so the development budget, like in the budgeting that we saw at the start of this year in February, 2 days before democracy was being applied globally, we were under the impression, the development budget obviously is allocated to the ministry, who's in charge of a specific activity that needs development funding for, and it flows out like that. But when we look at the discussion, the picture is not as clear cut, because this is 2024, 2025.
Yeah.
This was delivered at the end of last year. The analysis only shows up now at the start of this new year. Yes, the window is slightly shorter. It's wonderful. I mean, it at least it's not like the one time I tried following NASFAF's audits done by the same auditor general. And you find them. They had to consolidate one massive audit, Helmut, between, what was it, 2011 to 2018?
Ha!
Yeah.
That's a textbook.
They had to consolidate everything into one book for this one report, because the entity was not, or they weren't following up or something happened in terms of why, you know, annual reports were not done. So you then have scenarios like that with it, there could be potential problematic aspects. But here we find differences because 2025 was before, the new administration started, obviously. 2024 to 2025 is before the new administration started. So we potentially might see a different picture, Hamoud, if the same report also now was, you know, will cover 2025 to 2026
mm-hmm.
and we get a different picture, a different perspective about, okay, so how many homes were this time completed? Because
mm-hmm.
we also don't know of this build together program. What's the actual total of homes?
That were completed.
Oh. What is the actual total of these homes? The nice thing is, at least, and this is on a positive note. And yes, dear listeners, it's very few that Helmut and I, we have a lot of positivity in our voice mm-hmm. or in our programming. But what is positive from this is that you actually see a financial vehicle actually aiming to combat the housing issue in the country. What I would love to have seen, Helmut, is that the tallying, how many homes have been brought in since 2020 up until now into the housing market.
Mm-hmm.
Where are these homes? And then having like a dashboard that highlights this is the up-to-date housing demand
mm-hmm.
versus what has been
the execution level,
what has been delivered so far, and let's look at this because there's obviously a great indicator between, or great difference, not indicator, a great difference between 300,000 individual people who need a home
mm-hmm.
and potentially, let's say, 300,000 households. Because
yes.
households can be very big. I mean, if you say 300,000 times 3, because that was the explanation by the NSA's census report about
the size of the household.
The size of the households. In 2011, the households were bigger, meaning yeah. it was 4 people on average,
yeah.
but they were less. Whereas in 2023, the households were more, but the people became less.
Yeah. Per household.
Per household.
Yeah.
So, and under that particular explanation of the households being on average that they're mostly 3 people, you're looking at 900,000 potential homes. 900,000 people that need homes based on that metric. So is it 300,000 individual people that needed homes under the housing backlog statistic that up until today, no one is clear where it comes from, or is it 300,000 households? And the rate we are going at, I mean, back in 20, when was it that President Kainko passed away? 2024. In 2023, he inaugurated a handover of homes in, what was it, in the coast, where the statistics that he mentioned there was 5,000 at the time versus 300,000. It's like a footnote of
drop in there.
It's a drop in the ocean. It's a snail's pace of delivery. So, yeah, because I mean, this particular report actually speaks to a particular need that exists across the country, which has been a national problem or has been a national issue. It's a problem primarily because there's not enough vacant properties or homes or flats coming through for rental or for purchases. But yeah.
The housing demand is crazy, especially in Windhoek.
No, it is, Hamoud. There it is. And in between, we are getting all manner of foreigners loving Windhoek, loving the air of Windhoek, loving the shopping experience, loving the food. And they want a place to stay.
Yep.
Now you see people are busy renting out fully furnished homes for 30,000 a month. I'm like, yo.
It's a Well, if there's someone who is willing to buy, that's an excellent business model.
Yeah, they will do it.
Except the locals now will just look at that figure and go like,
I'm homeless.
Now, am I buying this house or is this just for one night?
Or am I homeless?
At this point, you know, just, I am homeless would be the right word order.
Yeah.
So, this, is a home run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. And today's discussion is based on the, Auditor General's report on the, development, on regional and rural development. Looking at it from, from the money point of view. And that's based on the report, from the Office of the Auditor General. Which is based on the Trust Fund for Regional and Development, Development and the Equity Provision 2024-2025 financial year, where they looked at a lot of things among them, more like a centered, really zoned in on the housing provision in Namibia and the progress being done, and especially on a regional or local level. And the, you know, the administrative, like the paperwork, you know, if this, it's the report coming out of unqualified, right? So it's been gone through by experts. So if the, if the experts are saying that, you know what, the administrative in terms of, financial reporting, compiling of everything, paperwork on a on a regional and local authority level is impeccable. 125%. Don't know where the 25% came from, but it seems like that's how good things are in the administrative aspect of things. But when it comes to the implementation and the execution of these housing projects to basically deal with the ballooning housing demand in Namibia, we still have a lot of work to do. But before we continue, let's take a short break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukulile Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doini nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, 13 minutes into the hour of 5. You're still listening to Home Run with Hemd and Dwight on Eagle FM now. Let's look at one of those things that's somewhat... one of those many things that's very interesting with this report. When you talk about project execution, so one thing, one thing that's referenced that I was able to find in terms of some of the delays associated to prosecute project execution is the lack of financing. Now, I did not run into, or I did not find, find where the report indicates that procurement a process, the sluggishness, which is now basically being associated with the procurement methods, which has led us to basically as looking in and also implementing the amendments of the Public Procurement Act, it's not in there. Does that mean it's not being faced as an issue in terms of the execution of these projects, or did I miss that paragraph? Because when it comes to the execution of program of the project, much of the emphasis is being put on the lack of funding.
Yeah, it is. But that's also why, just before the break, when obviously there where we left off with in terms of execution, rate of execution, the different explainers between. But you mentioned a rate of execution up here. Then there's a rate of execution of 100% over here, and sometimes 125%. Okay, that was in the admin work of space.
Yeah, in the admin, that's where you have a lot of 100 and 125.
125s, yeah. And then people will be asking, so what does it truly translate to for me on the ground? And then you get to the 8.3 that I highlighted.
Yeah.
So we're sitting with an 8.3 at the end of everything going like, okay, so... What is this 8.3? Does this mean it's new projects that came along?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we talking about existing projects? Or are we talking about projects that probably dipped into the contingency funds?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it projects that needed extra financing here or extra funding there? What are these questions? And this is obviously a scenario that tries to, first and foremost, just account for monies received. Straightforward. But that's also something. Even though it's a question of monies received,
mm-hmm.
the question that we left off in just before the ad break was, will we see something different now with 2025, 2026? Will we see potentially a quicker injection? Meaning, in September last year, when the finance minister said development. Budget was implementation rate of development budget was only at 31%. Will we potentially see this report when it comes out later this year from the Auditor General depicting a picture of there was rate of completion that had been improved?
Like for the 2024-2025 financial year?
No. 2025, 2026.
Yeah, I think part of the problem would be compiling the information, because when it comes to gathering all the information, they basically need to put together a report like this. They have to do that also in line with the Section 22 of the public enterprise governance. That means at the after a financial year ends, public entities have to submit all the necessary documents needed to compile a report within 6 months. So that takes us already from March 2026 to August 2026.
Yeah.
Now, from August 2026, let's say within this time period, all the SOEs and all the executive offices basically that needs to submit all their financial records. And you're looking at, from executive office, although this is much more just emphasizes regional and rural development, regional and local authorities. So it basically runs until August. Now they have, September, October, and November to compile that information and basically go through them in a way that basically compress it and summarize it into a report that's 37 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm factoring in weekends and holidays and the fact that, after that you have December. 90% of the time these things will spill, unless they can do it if they get all the information between March and August, if they can do it between, September, October, and November. I wouldn't count November. Let's just throw in November, October. So from August, you have September, October, and November. You have 3 months that they basically have to go through all this information and compile a report.
Mm.
Now, like this one. Now, just bear in mind, this is just on regional and local authorities. So that means if you were to basically take, for example, do one on what's taking place in other aspects of development apart from the housing discussion, that's where do roads come in, for example, in terms of connectivity?
Exactly. Yeah. Or where does, for example...
Because I imagine that would be a whole report on its own.
Yeah. Or let's say the let's say it's a new neighborhood that pops up that has to be cleared.
Or new gravel roads now that are being tarred.
Yeah. Does that feature now in the does that now feature in the local authorities development budgeting? Meaning they said, okay, we will cover the financing from our development budget for gravel, you know, clearing a network of roads for this new neighborhood and connection of services, and we will connect services in this regard. Because things start looking weird, Helmut. For example, like under the mass housing project in, was it Karibab or was it Usikas? The homes that were handed over there by the former minister of MURD, Erastus Otoni, where the price tag for connecting services to these properties
as land servicing now.
Yeah, was literally, what was it? Was it 5 million or 10 million? Because it came out like 10 million or something. But it was like 75,000 per ERF. It's between 10 or 5 million, one of the two price tags, because it was literally 75,000 per ERF, per urban.
That's just for servicing.
Just connecting services. Water and electricity.
Yeah.
So, we sit with a particular scenario of also trying to find the affordability component.
Mm-hmm.
In many scenarios, yes, on the political spectrum of things in Namibia, we do have some politicians that would say subsidize, subsidize, subsidize. But mm-hmm. to what extent, Helmut? Because the question would still
The question is, do you have the money?
Firstly, yes.
Yeah.
Do you have the budgeting room?
Yeah.
Which is the other thing that Minister Shafuda kept speaking about.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be making expensive
promises.
Another scenario would also be specifically, how do you try to mitigate demand specifically concentrated in certain locations of the country? Because Helmut, we also have to be honest here. If you don't work in Witvlei, you won't buy a property in Witvlei.
Why?
If you don't live close to your job, let's use Windhoek. If you're not living in Windhoek, in Rehoboth, Windhoek or
Okahanja/Osona,
you will not buy a property in Otjiwarongo or in Marintal or in Gobabis to drive literally 300 k's from there to Windhoek.
Yeah.
Just to come and work. You won't buy a property there.
To commute that distance, you'll need a chopper.
Not just a chopper, Hamud. We're literally talking about you'll have to drive like the 7-seaters, F1 style. You'll just be flying on the road and flying back home.
Yeah, assuming the road is all yours.
And assuming that you've got the money for that petrol tank, or that diesel tank, yeah, go for it. But you won't live so far away.
Yeah, no, you won't.
And then commute up and down to work. So the concerns are also things of, how did we assess the need for affordable housing? Or the need for housing, mass housing? Because mass housing is one thing. Bringing affordable housing to needed areas is something else. Windhoek needs something like that. But Windhoek needs a better kind of planning, because not everyone can afford a 4-bedroom or 3-bedroom or 2-bedroom thing, and you're just a bachelor like Dwight. You're just a batch, Helmut.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing on the market for you are 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, fully furnished homes, and you're like, what's this?
Yeah.
Whose needs are we talking to? Now, it makes economics also difficult in Namibia, because my younger brother popped up the other day and he said, you know what, guys, being married is the most preferential position you want to be in this Namibian economy.
The most what?
Preferential position you want to be. Preferred position you want to be.
Okay, why?
Because married people have more money. If they both have jobs,
uh-huh.
you have more money than if you were just lone starring or lone wolfing it the whole time?
Because of the combined
salaries,
income.
You can do so much more. You don't need to have takeout or live on takeaways or weird things like that.
Is he married too? Because that's an angel.
No, not just him. His wife knows it. Because they both highlight that their budgeting is just like top notch.
No. Look, I think your brother, skipped one important step.
Yeah.
Yeah, meet the one who is willing to live that life. Not the one who says too much human rights of your money is our money, but my money is my money type mentality.
But that does happen, Howard. But the nice thing is, what he explained was, basically, besides obviously talking about the human needs of things, like you won't be, when you get home, it's just you and your walls looking at each other. If you're a bachelor, it's just you and your walls looking at each other.
You're making our lives depressing, dude.
Hey, bro, that life is staring at me just at the end of this month. So, yeah.
You are new. Welcome.
Yeah. even though I've been a bachelor my whole life, but the discussion that the ability, the preferred economic climate, a client in this economy, in Namibia, since independence up to now, Helmut, has always been married people. Why? Since obviously we promote in the Namibian landscape, women must also have preference in the job market.
Yeah.
They must also be allowed to explore options and opportunities. There's money abound. They make more money. They add more value, and meaning they, if it was just men working, it was a limitation.
Definitely.
That's what I'm explaining. Yeah. So now that we've also got women in the economy, and you've got what do they call that? Two income households present in Namibia. There's money abound. That's why you see the shopping malls are always parents and their kids or couples hanging out together at the malls. And you know, if you're just lone wolfing it there, you look dodgy. But yeah,
hey,
hey man, it happens.
You only look dodgy if you're wearing, a pair of All Stars and a jean.
Hey, I was that close to buying All Stars the other day.
That's I buy like a pair or two a year.
Yeah.
And that's
it's a pretty durable sneaker. Let's not look down on it.
It's very durable. The thing is, I think it's been associated with
forfeiture.
With the asset forfeiture department. Like, wherever you go, people will look at you like,
But they don't know it was a basketball shoe before it became the negative association that it got here in Southern Africa from South Namibia.
Look, it's the same thing with the Land Cruiser. Toyota did not intend to basically find a market where, in a place where, you know, their cars are blown off more than they last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that they can prove of being, what they call it, combat feasible.
Yeah. They didn't even test for that when they were making the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All they wanted to do is,
make it durable.
Was for farmers in the bush in Australia. Mm-hmm. And then they realized they are farmers in Southern Africa.
They realized they are farmers with AK-47s.
Then they realized they are farmers, who fake being farmers, but they're actually just a whole bunch of guys that love wearing something that looks like a dress.
Yeah.
And something that looks like a towel on their head. And then they are doing donuts in the desert. Yeah. That's all they knew. So, yeah. And, I mean, Helmut, when we obviously also look at economic planning, Namibia will still maintain that position, I mean, way past, even if you and I don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say 2050. Namibia will still have that attribute because of the discussion that we also highlighted from Davos's particular event where, what was the guy from the AFCFTA, the South African? Where he literally said, we have to stop looking at Africa as, you will have the workforce of the future. You will have this. You will have, you know, all the promising.
Everything is, you have a youthful population. So yeah, these and these prospects.
You will have the most youthful population by so and so and so and all these labels and all these identifiers. But what he highlighted was, we've got to start implementing now. We've got to start meeting needs now, meeting demands now. Hamut, the biggest concern, for example, in the Namibian landscape has been specifically around land. When we had the land discussion, the one about the proposed land bill, and when we read the land bill last year, we were like, it said these guys are talking about agricultural land. But do you know what's currently happening right now as we're talking? Currently, right now, Namibians who are going for lovely nature drives throughout the country, they hear of farmers of private land selling to foreigners. And one of the aims of the land bill, which is stated there when you and I review, when you and I did the last year's discussion, was that the sale of farming land should not happen to foreigners. That's already happening, Helmut. We highlighted that last year or as well with the court case, the Rashid Sardarov court case about the two and a half farms that was bought from two farmers, two brothers, and then donated to the Ministry of Agriculture.
Now, I think the reason why we will never stop having that discussion, or especially on the sale of a private, of a private farm or basically any land, is it's like selling, opening up a Lamborghini dealership in Namibia. How much money does the government, I know that they are like, the first priority in terms of, they must be given a first priority in terms of buying. The thing is, it all comes down to one thing. Do they have the money? Now, if I'm a private farmer, like, this is what I'm looking at it from. If I'm a private farmer and I have this, farmland that I want to sell, and I'm looking for a market here in Namibia, and no one is coming out of the public sector to basically, or out of the government itself, you know, to buy that property at the price that's been evaluated, not by me, if I'm not qualified to do that, I will have to outsource that that role to financial institutions. After that evaluation, they will come back with a price and I'll give you that price. If you can't afford it, what am I supposed to do if I want to sell? Do I have to wait for you to have money, or do I have to, or I can just go ahead and sell it to this, foreign guy who's coming with lot of foreign currency, by the way. This is the dilemma.
No, you are right, Ahmed, because the dilemma is, what are some of the functionaries of the public sector doing? Like, we've now looked at this trust fund that actually aims to assist in the mass housing. It's actually assisting in the mass housing implementation, because the Build Together program, Ahmed, is older than the mass housing program. The Build Together program was the first initial project that the government tried to start. Build Together was actually something else, but it had the same aim. Provide affordable housing across the country. But as we've been seeing, rollout was obviously super slow. Implementation was obviously on levels of snail. It's literally a snail that was put in reverse, but is still being forced to move forward. That's how slow things were.
Jeez.
Because a snail is already slow. But if you put a snail in reverse and tell him, try to move forward while being in reverse, you've got a problem. Or looking at a scenario when now mass housing kicked off, was it from 2012 or from 2010? Mass housing kicks off from 2010-ish. What are the deliverables? What were some of the targets? What are the targets? What do the targets look like? Because
the annual targets or targets overall in line with initiatives like NDP 6.
Well, let's take NDP 6 first out of this discussion, Ahmed, because NDP 6 is a year old now. The concern would have been there have been two NDPs between 2010 to 2020.
How much progress was made?
How much progress has been made?
In just one aspect, that's housing.
Yeah, with one project, with one goal. Or with one desire, let's call it mass housing. What was achieved over this time period? You won't see that statistic easily. Because in 2018, the 300,000 pops up. this magical number of this housing backlog discussion, which everyone is also asking, who and where did you measure what? Who was measured? Now, 300,000 has been the go-to theme since 2018. It's just stuck there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just literally stuck there. Now, are we tallying off from 300,000? Or are new people coming along that need houses or that need homes? And are we adjusting this accordingly? Has a new particular sort of like measurement been done, this exercise?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ahmed, this is an exercise that you technically need to be doing annually to understand what is the actual housing need. You can't do this every 10 years. We can't be doing this to try and see, okay, did we actually make a dent on the 300,000 by 2028? Did we make a dent? We don't know. Why not? Because we still don't know.
That will be based, or that will have to be based on how much. Okay, take for example, in terms of annual progress.
Yeah.
How many houses are being built in a year across all projects?
Yeah.
And then using that annual progress, then you can look at using these projections. Where do we see ourselves in 5 years? If we have to keep up,
you're thinking like a business person, Helmut. Yeah. In projections, we're thinking about 5 years. Helmut, here's the thing. That's not what we've been seeing.
What have we been?
That's not what we've been seeing. You'll see somewhere in this year.
Yeah.
Minister Sankwasa will show up and say, I'm now handing over X amount of houses in so and so local authority. And so far we've delivered X amount of houses against the 300,000 backlog. You will see this. I'm making another bet with you. This time I'm only risking $5. Because it's based upon the event. It's based upon the event that the minister actually does show up at a housing handover situation. And he is being given statistics to share with the world.
Yeah, but moreover, when you look at these statistics, or if you look at the delivery to more like demand ratio, the numbers are not very.
But how much the demand didn't stand still? It won't. So that is the other correction that we've got to try and achieve is, okay, have things moved? Did we make a dent? Because to report back in 2023, the last housing project that President Geingob had handed over in Walvis, where he literally said it's 4,000 at that time or 5,000 at that time that they've delivered. And you're like, against the 300,000? And at that stage, it was a bad statistic, because I tried calculating how much the delivery was, the rate of delivery per month or per year.
Yeah.
No, per year. And it was like 31. Like 31 houses or something like that.
Okay, is this per year, per town, per region, or overall?
Well, it was an overall that I calculated at the time. And I was like, 31? Okay. What are we doing? So.
Well, whatever it is, it's not enough.
Unfortunately, yeah. So we immediately have to identify certain things. For now, the discussion of NDP 6 has to be thrown literally in its own shelf space on the on the bookshelf. But you have to look at housing as a discussion of, okay, let's alleviate a particular pressure, but we also have to look at what it does to the housing economy. Primarily, people will buy and sell properties, Helmut.
Yeah.
Like recently bought mass-produced houses or flats or stuff. Because the moment you achieve ownership of the thing, not rental ownership, not as a tenant, literally you bought the thing.
The ownership paperwork.
Will it be transferred? Will it be sold off? Will those particular actions happen? And how will the local authorities react? Because the ministry will not own these assets.
Yeah.
We have to identify this as well. Because currently, Ahmed, when you look at that report also that we looked at a little bit earlier, they're not saying they're owning the assets. These various built together program homes that are being built.
Yeah.
They don't own it. but they are helping with financing. They're not taking ownership. So they're acting in a way like a building society, but they're not a building society. Because the actual building society is supposed to be NHE.
Yeah.
They are supposed to be the actual building society. So we're also...
Supposed to be, or they are?
Well, a building society, Helmut, would be open to the whole economy.
Except?
Except the question is, are they open to the whole economy?
As in, the whole economy is in both public and private?
Yeah. Meaning, can you as a private citizen, Helmut, let's say the savings you've got, go to NHE and ask NHE, is there a catalog of homes I can buy?
Yeah. Is there an...
In various locations. Yeah.
Is there a price bracket where I think, you know...
Yeah. And can you accommodate me? Because if I resuscitate that thing that I recorded in 2024 with the deputy speaker of the Russian parliament visited here in 2024, when that lady met with the Ministry of Gender and Child Welfare. What was the minister's name? The deputy minister. So when they met, she asked the deputy minister, what measures does Namibia use or does the ministry use to alleviate specifically homelessness and trying to help orphans and people that are, you know, that need social safety net, social safety protections? And then the minister mentioned, yeah, the only mechanisms we have at play currently is like the conditional grants. Conditional grants is the old age grant,
yeah,
the disability grant, the orphans and vulnerable child grant. Those three grants. And yeah, then you've got the veterans grant doesn't fall under that ministry because it falls on the Ministry of Defense. And then there's another grant that popped up recently. And I thought this grant was... it's this one that we also advertised at the start of this year, the one by the NAMPOST guys, but NAMPOST was just dispensing. And there's something odd that I observed there in terms of that there was an additional grant that was made mention of. It's like helping parents who don't make enough money. It sounds like the vulnerable children's grant, but it's sort of like a particular financing they could make, that they could access. So we only have conditional grants. We don't have actual basic income grants.
Like a universal one.
Or universal income grants. Oh no! It was a basic income grant. Yeah! That was the term that was used at the start of this year with that particular NAMPOST, interview I had to do here with the marketing, representative. Because then there was a word, basic income grant, that was used in the literature and I was like, is this an actual basic income grant? So we've got conditional grants. However, in Russia, if the person was an orphan and the person reaches 18 years, now they have to move out of the orphanage.
Mm.
They are given a flat by the government.
So you don't tell them, okay, now you have turned 18.
Go and build a shack for you somewhere.
We think you have now figured out life.
Yeah.
So just...
Bye-bye. Go with God. You know, enjoy your life. That's not what they do. When this lady explained it to the deputy minister at the time, this lady from the committee from the Russian Duma, and I was like, you give a flat for free away?
Because free though is subsidized.
The person gets it for free, Hamid.
Okay.
The person gets it because the person is now a young adult.
Yeah.
They have to move out of the orphanage because the orphanage has age limits.
Yeah.
So they have to move out and they have to go and, you know, now be part of the economy.
Yeah.
And the questions were also asked about, okay, so how does the person now navigate between finding a job, going to study if they have aspirations of studying.
Mm.
And what it was explained was, yeah, provisions will be made. The person has to register here, register there, do this, do that, fit in here, do this. And I was like, whoo, Africa. That's all I can say. We have the resources. I now get every, I understand now fully.
Yeah, that part.
I understand fully now, Helmut, why you know, our president for the whole year of last year was saying, we are too few to be poor. I was like,
I was this close to defending us with, hey, you know, we, well, those guys go back like over, what, I don't know, 500 years.
Yep.
And we're just 30 something, so.
We're just 36, but we can at least reach certain goals.
The resources part, there's no excuse for that.
We can reach certain goals with the resources. Yeah. That's why I still believe, Helmut, and I ask this question every time when I get to like national platforms where they allow for questions and answer. Why don't we start looking at the Alaska, what's that fund? The Alaska Provident or something fund?
Oh, yeah.
Where you can rather give
the extractive guys
tax-free. You give a tax-free payment, Helmut.
The extractive guys are not going to like that.
I mean, you give a tax-free payment.
Yeah.
To people from a certain age group and higher.
No criminal record.
You must
prove.
And you
see how people will behave.
You must prove that you don't have a criminal record. Every calendar year, you're given a new conduct certificate.
Yeah.
To update. And you must have been living in the country for X amount. That way, Helmut, I believe, Namibia can achieve a lot of goals. Yes, we might suffer a little bit of inflation pressure.
Yeah.
Because there'll be more money flowing.
Look. Not enough products since most of them are coming out of the, you know, outside the country.
Capitalists are capitalists. They will make their money. At least we'll be able to multiply what we saw happening at, what was the place where they had the pilot scheme? The basic income grant pilot scheme?
Isn't that in America?
No, Ochozonjuba. It was in Ochozonjuba. It wasn't in Omaeke.
Oh.
The actual place. What was the place's name? Omitara.
Omitara.
No, then Omitara is was Omaeke. Or is it I think it's Ochozonjuba. So, when they did that pilot scheme at Omitara, when you and I did the report last year, what did those people say, literally? When it came through, even at $500 a month, we had the opportunity of starting businesses.
You know, yeah, sending kids to school.
Sending kids to school.
Food security came in. It was like, yeah,
was achieved. And local enterprises were being explored and supported by, since you have a $500, Hamid, and I have a $500, I'm buying from you. Mm-hmm. You are buying from, who can I use? From Loisa. Loisa is buying from Matthias. Yeah. Matthias is buying from Happy. So we were supporting each other. And then literally when the scheme then closes and ends, now it goes back to square one. Some tried to survive. Some have been struggling. Some just didn't survive past that particular threshold.
Yeah.
So, the president is right in a particular statement. When we look at trying to deal with developmental issues, we are too few to be poor.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of question marks that needs to be asked about what we do in the local authorities and the regional authority realms.
Yeah.
Because this report, Helmut, is not complete. It doesn't give us the complete picture. And in between, we now have new councillors. We now got new councillors at the end of 2025. So now we have to see, will these guys just continue with things? Or is it now, let's remix, recycle, reuse, and reduce? Or let's amplify a message of some kind. So we have to see now. Now, the biggest debate I've had recently.
Yeah.
It wasn't a work related debate. It was with my younger brother. I asked him, a metropolitan area like Windhoek has to really rethink its particular ambition, Helmut. Remember, you remember the few times last year when I said the Windhoek will have to split up itself into smaller metropolitans or into small, not metropolitan, into smaller municipalities just for it to be able to meet all service needs, at increased service provision levels. Now, for example, a family member of mine that did live in South Africa explained to me that Johannesburg consists of a whole bunch of metropolitan areas. Each metropolitan area has its own municipality. So what am I explaining to you? In Afrikaans, what she explained to me was Johannesburg has something known as a voorstad. A voorstad, if you understand it, is like a frontline city. But technically, it should be, it has its own, it's a mini city. It's a place that has 500,000 people. Or, like my sister explained, Namibia is Boksburg, right outside Johannesburg. Boksburg is one of those metropolitan areas. Boksburg's population in South Africa is 3 million people.
Huh?
Yes. Boksburg is 3 million people. Has 3 million people in it.
What land mass are we talking about?
Probably the same. Probably slightly smaller. Because if Boksburg, which has its own municipality, which has its own shopping malls, its own schools, or circuit of schools, if you think about it, because it's a circuit itself, meaning the circuit of Boksburg aims to provide services to people who live in Boksburg. The circuit of Randburg only aims to provide the needs for people living in Randburg. The circuit of, what was the other place's name that I mentioned? There was another place. There's another one, man. But anyway, so when you look at these particular metropolitan areas around Johannesburg itself, and Johannesburg has its own neighborhoods, within itself, you realize, okay, economic activity is intense, eh? And there's a lot of money there. And there's a lot of demand for needs and services. So you should be acting accordingly and you should allocate investment and financing accordingly. But when you come to an Namibian discussion, Helmut, ask yourself the question, for example, Groothoop should be a municipality by itself.
With how many people?
I don't know how many people are in Groothoop. Groothoop is too small to even care. But Groothoop is a town by itself, Helmut.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, with how many people, considering Namibia's population.
Exactly. But Groothoop should have its own particular municipal office. Now, the designation probably exists that 50 kilometers around Windhoek is the municipal zone.
Yeah, that falls under city of Windhoek.
Yeah. Which is dodgy.
In what way?
Because Helmut, if city of Windhoek adds a new extension to itself, let's say it adds a new neighborhood, and it clears out the land there, and it connects the services, and it starts selling the properties, the vacant properties for development. That means that extension automatically pushes the 50 kilometer further on. Where you would find yourself, where last year you weren't in the 50 kilometer, this year you are in the 50 kilometer. That's why I said it's dodgy. So, and I'm going to say it now categorically here. City of Windhoek will not move southwards. The city of Windhoek will not move southwards.
You have said that before, like several times.
It won't, Helmut.
Why?
Because right outside Windhoek is the military base of Leopardville.
We don't want to expand towards military base.
Yeah. And that land around the military base is owned by NDF and MOD. And you've got the mountain range just here in front of you. I think it's the Awas Mountains, these mountains here, heading through the mountains specifically to Rehoboth. This mountain range here, the Awas Mountains. So, City of Windhoek won't move over the mountain. I'll tell you now, it won't fill in this next 10 kilometers up to the mountain, across the mountain, and then try to connect to Groothoop.
Maybe in the next 100 years.
I'd even put it at probably the next 200 years. But Groothoop needs to be a metropolitan, not a metropolitan, needs to be a municipality or a local authority by itself. And then MURD has to literally put in writing to City of Windhoek, relinquish your particular influence over City of Windhoek, over Groothoop, because primarily it will need to become a community by itself. It already is in spirit, but
and hope.
But the downside is they need to fly their own flag, which then means, Helmut, they need to then start having investment, a town council, its own council, and so on and so forth. Because currently, right now, you have Windhoek residents that are representing Groothoop, which forms part of I think it's Windhoek Rural.
Groothoop.
Yeah, I think it's Windhoek Rural, the constituency, which is dodgy, Helmut. I say it's dodgy because the question you have to ask yourself is, okay, where does the service have to come from?
Windhoek.
Exactly. Which means also, how does Windhoek connect itself there? Not easy.
There's a blueprint somewhere that, you know.
Yeah, we fly across the mountain. We see ourselves, you know, in the sky and on the clouds.
I just get a tram.
Okay, I'm with that one too. But things won't be easy to connect communities. And if you want to bring services to people, we have to think about it in a sensible way that actually speaks to how do we address development issues. Now, here's the thing. This also means that the people of Groothoop, and I'm just using Groothoop and City of Windhoek as an example, just so that if anyone is listening from these two entities, just know I'm just being purely academic. I'm not advocating for anything. Even though you can clearly see it on the writing is on the wall, it's going to happen. But this is a scenario that has to be pursued. Windhoek will just grow bigger, yes. But Windhoek will grow bigger to the west, here to in that direction of Ongos, which is that other development on the other side of Havana and the other informal settlements that City of Windhoek is now trying to formalize. And Windhoek will grow eastwards, here to the airport. And Windhoek will probably grow northwards, you know, to Elisenheim and in the direction of Osona.
Yeah.
But remember, Osona is in Ochotonjupa, in the other region. It's not in Windhoek side of things. Because apparently the roadblock was installed right on the regional border. The new thing that I went to go and cover, the thing with the roof and the funny office and stuff.
Isn't that how they are usually installed?
Well, it's weird, Helmut, because Hosea Kotako International Airport is still in Comas. It's not in
Omaheke.
It's not in Omaheke because the roadblock, you get to the roadblock here first before you get to the airport. So
I thought that's how they installed, like just at regional borders.
This one here southwards is just on the other side of Somabazia. Just as you exit here past Somabazia, just drive past the military. It's literally at the turnoff for the military base.
I've seen it.
Yeah, so which also tells you that's not the regional border between Hartap and Comas, because that border is literally, I think, 10 kilometers outside the Rebos. Or 20 Ks outside the Rebos.
Before
you get into Hartap.
Get into Rehoboth or
Before you get into Rebos.
Before you get into Rehoboth.
Yeah. That regional border lies like 20 or 10 Ks right outside Rehoboth. Then the constituency area of Rehoboth also starts. So you drive not just into Hartap, you also drive into the constituency area of the town itself, of the municipality itself. But before we continue, Helmut, we've got a quick live read to do. Vavitcha University, for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Admission requirements for candidates are as follows. Candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must be a registered nurse or midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the Health Professions Council of Namibia. Candidates must also have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility, and candidates must write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing the postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year and the mode of delivery is full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
And yeah, ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners, that's how we come to the end of Home Run. Now, just one thing. This is by far one of those, split, one of those reports that's basically giving me mixed feelings. It's basically 50% of good news and 50% of not very good news. And the 50% of good news is predominantly in the administrative, administrative space of things. And I'm appreciating that because I've gone through several, procurement tracker coming out of IPPR when it comes to, I think I've been following the regional and local authority and basically overall national financial reporting. So all the way to political parties like we did last year was 2024. Yeah. And one thing that I've learned was that when it comes to financial reporting, holy cow, it was terrible. But coming across a report that's basically indicating that administrative-wise, things are just, up in the ionosphere. That, for me, is a 50%.
You went as far as ionosphere.
It's 125%. That's coming from the guys that looked at the Ministry of Health and went like, we're not saying you chop the money. We're just saying this whole emergency thing. I'm sure it was an emergency for you guys, but not according to the public procurement.
And it doesn't say such a good precedent, you know. It doesn't look nice.
So look, when guys like that, and they also the guys that looked at the Ministry of Agriculture, and was that Ministry of Agriculture or Ministry of Environment? Like, you guys must sit and discuss on how you should stop creating chaos for each other. Because environment, you're in charge of the preservation of the environment, and the guys there by agriculture are using some kind of, the fertilizer that they're using is going to give you guys hard work in the long run.
And even the insecticides that they're using.
Exactly.
You guys have to talk.
By the way, all of you needs to stop working in silos. Yeah, so believe me, those guys are brutal. So when they are saying, you are doing well here, oh, believe me, you are doing well, or they would have pointed it out. So now, the administrative part of things in terms of financial reporting, bravo to the regional and local authorities. The execution, a lot of aspects are basically associated to the hindrance of the execution of projects, especially what's emphasized in this report. That's the housing project.
Mm.
Financing is a very, very large aspect of it.
Financing will be,
Financing will be, but I still can't get over the fact that they did not reference this sluggishness in procurement, because that's the first thing, that's the first thing that popped in my head when you sent the report. I was like, oh boy, here we go again with procurement. I went through it and I was like, okay, so this means...
It probably meant they didn't procure anything directly, like I highlighted in terms of the ownership thing.
Yeah.
Since we're seeing this as homes being built for the housing market.
Yeah.
So this means they didn't have anything to do directly with procurement or putting out ads, trying to invite vendors.
For cement and bricks. And
all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Or submit particular budget plans and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a pretty straightforward report to look at. Sounded nice-ish to an extent. I say nice-ish because...
Nice-ish.
Because, there wasn't a lot of rock star things, man.
Yeah. Bravo to, Ocho and...
And Opuo.
Opuo. Thank you, not Ocho. Opuo. And... As for Hobabis and Marinda, situation critical.
all they did was just ask for more money.
All right, 4 minutes into business and economic segment time, and David is here to take it over. So please do stay tuned for business and economic segment with David. And for home run from me, you all have a blessed evening, especially police officers and teachers.
Let's see each other again tomorrow. Same time, same place, guys. Stay tuned.